And we are now live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Comprehensive and Accessible Transportation Committee. I'm waiting just a moment to finish adding additional members. All right, welcome to everyone. This is convening Lane Transit District's Comprehensive and Accessible Transportation Committee, a committee of the Board of Directors. We've received notices of absence of a couple of members. Currently, we don't have our chair or vice chair present, so unless there's objection, I was going to make sure that we can move through our agenda today. In lieu of the preliminary remarks from the chair, I just wanted to issue a reminder to committee members, please do whenever possible, try to be present 10 minutes before the meeting start time. Moving into announcements and additions to agenda, I have heard word that we'd like to make one addition to today's agenda. We do have quite a bit on our current agenda, but we wanted to make sure that there was time to talk about our general manager recruitment process. We have Mark Johnson with us to be able to speak to that progress, and I believe an ask for volunteers to be able to participate.
Yeah, thanks, John. So yeah, this is just a quick update that we are in the process of recruiting for new general manager. We are narrowing down the candidate numbers and hopefully towards the end of May, we'll have a kind of a final process for deciding a general manager for the district. And so, what we're trying to do is be really inclusive in our process. And in that vein, we're looking for some volunteers from this committee. And we've also got some volunteers from our strategic planning committee. And so we're looking at having like three from each committee that's willing to serve on a interview panel. And so we would ask for any of you to consider that. And if you're interested in doing that, it will probably be the week of May 24th, one day in there. And so probably for, you know, a few hours of your time. So if you're interested, and for those committee members who aren't here, I guess we can reach out and to them and also invite them to participate or volunteer. So that in a nutshell is kind of the update of where we're at, but we would like to you know, include members of this committee on the interview panel. So thank you.
We will absolutely make sure to reach out to the full committee with this ask. Are there any questions, comments, or volunteers regarding the general manager recruitment process for members currently here?
Is it expected to be a day process, or will it take place over multiple days?
The process itself will take place over multiple days, but the interview panel that you would be serving on would probably be one day. So, you know, usually they're an hour to an hour and a half interviews with, you know, a break in between. So it would probably be maybe 5 or 6 hours for three candidates. But we will also have community forums that you can participate in as well. But for the, what I'm looking for now is an interview panel. And so it'd be one day.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, comments, or volunteers before we move on? We will send out a formal ask to all of the members, and we'll look forward to having this group's participation in the general manager recruitment process. So thanks for bringing that forward.
Thank you.
I did want to note, I believe we are just shy of a quorum with our committee for today. We did receive notification of some absences. The good news is our agenda is packed with informational items which do not require either an action item or a quorum for us to proceed. So our agenda can continue as we'd originally planned for this meeting. So next, we've got audience participation, so comments from the public. Camille, our clerk of the board, if you want to lead us through this.
Yes, and I am actually not showing anyone indicating that they, like any community members in attendance or showing that they would like to provide testimony. So I will hand it right back to you. Thank you, John.
Thank you. That is very easy. As I noted, we don't currently have any items for action or items for board recommendation at this meeting, though we certainly will in future meetings. And so that takes us to our items for information and discussion, and we have plenty. And so at the top of the agenda, we have our service plan for fall 2022 with some presentation materials included, if you wouldn't mind having those screen shared. Tom Schwetz from our planning department is going to kick us off for this. And Tom, you may be on mute. Tom, still on mute.
What Zoom meeting would be complete without a technical difficulty?
It's very true. And maybe while...
How about now?
Perfect. Where are you now?
Carry two headsets for a reason, I guess. So good afternoon, everyone. I am going to kick this discussion off regarding our plans for service this coming fall and give you some background. And then I'm going to ask Brett Smith, one of our service planners, to dive into some of the details. You may be familiar with the fact that we conduct what we call three service changes or bids every year. I think I went over that back in January. Those bids fall in the winter, the summer, and the fall. Generally, that's the beginning of February, late June, and it can range from mid-September to early October for the fall bid, depending on the U of O schedule. And it's in those bids, we'll look at the opportunities for fixing certain things that may have arisen with respect to our service. We'll typically reduce service in the summer as students are not in session. And then our biggest increases and our major service changes happen in the fall. And as I described back in January, there is, some uncertainty as we talk to our transit operator partners across the, particularly the Northwest, but across the country, there's some uncertainty as to how transit ridership is going to return. And we're actually budgeting for only minor changes in service for the next fiscal year. And again, Brett will describe that that service. So in that context, we're in a process now where we're ready to discuss our fall bid, and would ask you for any questions or comments you might have as Brett goes through some of the key details. So Brett, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to share with you all today. First of all, I assume you can see my screen and that you can hear me well. So fall service adjustments and changes usually orchestrated around most of our major changes during the year with the conditions as Tom outlined. Some of those changes are kind of minimized for this fall due to budget restraints and different things that are happening. So some of the things that you may be aware of that in the summertime, we reduce some of our college services and our high school services, which is the 79X, 81, the 82, and 36. Those will return as usual in the fall. So there will be an uptick of those routes as well. The two things I wanted to really focus on today, though, would be routes 51 and 52 and routes 17 and 18. Routes 51 and 52 are going to have some minor changes, and I'm going to skip to the next slide to show you that real quick. This is a zoomed in view of the routing of Route 51 and 52, which serve the River Road, Santa Clara area. If you ride that, you're familiar that as we leave Eugene Station up Olive, we make that left on 8th and then continue either onto Washington and then resume routing according to the route. The city is in process of making improvements to 8th Street to turn it into more of a pedestrian and bicycle corridor and bring two-way traffic through that section. Thus, what that has created for us is the inability to operate on that particular street. So the proposed change now is a simple one and basically a minor change, but we're going to go straight up Olive. Instead of turning on 8th, we're going to actually go to 5th Street, which is the same area that the Route 40 also operates on, as well as one in the easterly direction. So minor change, nothing major. We don't really have too many options in this case. This is a case where we just can't safely operate on 8th Street based on the changes. So this was the routing change that would accommodate that. This next particular change is in relationship to Routes 17 and 18 in Springfield, which serve the Hayden Bridge area, Markfuller Road, Olympic, which holds some major trip generators such as Winco Foods, Walmart, Fred Meyer up on the 17. If you look at the slide, you'll see up in the right-hand corner there, you're going to see a blue box that says new development. And if you're familiar with some of the development in the area, which is called Markola Meadows, I believe is the correct terminology, there is going to be a, right on the corner of 28th and Markola Road, a 400 unit or somewhere right around there apartment complex. There's going to be a school. There's going to be a church, and then about 1,500 small lot, single housing residential back in behind all of that. So as we were looking at this and consulting with the city of Springfield on this, we felt like that we needed to make some changes on this route to better accommodate and make this more useful to the riders in this area. If you're in that area, you know that if you're going down to Walmart, for example, we only have one direction on the 18, which means that if you might get there or you might be able to get home easily, but then one of the directions, it's kind of like you got to either go down to the Springfield Station or do some crazy transfers to try to make that happen. So in looking at that, what we're proposing this fall is to change the routing where we are taking the outbound or the inbound of Route 17 and the inbound of Route 18 and swapping them. And what that has done, you'll see on the map, is provide on Markola Road, which again serves that new development, serves Albertsons. I believe there's medical offices there as well. Winco on Olympic, as well as Walmart Supercenter. It allows for bi-directional service in this area. So what that it does in turn basically is you go down to Walmart to go shopping, you come in the bus one direction, you just cross the street to get on the bus to go back home instead of having to, in some cases, go all the way down to Springfield Station to make your transfers, come back around, lug in your groceries. So we believe this is a win for the neighborhood. Just a couple things too. We have been running pretty much a pandemic level service on this route. However, this summer we are bringing up the service quite a bit to help kind of provide a little bit more usefulness to this area. This Route 17 and 18 proposed changes are not locked in. So that does mean that if there is something in this that you see that we don't see that could be not a good thing, we would love to hear from you. With that, that's pretty much what I have. And if there's any questions.
Or comments.
Or comments, yeah.
Don, you have a question. Don, you're on mute currently.
I'm sorry, but on that previous slide on Route 51, does that go up adjacent to the high rise there, the senior center?
Are you referring to Yopoa?
Yes.
No, so this is, Yopoa is served by Route 1, Route 66, Route 67. This is the westerly direction. The Route 1 would go easterly on 5th from Olive in that direction. So this is the west side heading out towards River Road.
Okay, thank you. I was also wondering on that one, when you get out on River Road Station or the Santa Clara Station out there, has there been any discussion or planning or anything about servicing the airport area off of Irvington? I mean, we tried that a couple of years ago and it just didn't work. There wasn't enough traffic, but I don't know. Mark talked about doing stuff for the the games, but I don't know if we're going to participate in servicing the airport in any way or any time in the future.
So let me take that, and Brett could clean up. a couple of things. One is, over the last 40 years or so, we have periodically experimented at the behest of the community in providing service to the airport. And it's problematic for a couple of logistical reasons. One is, as you are likely familiar, most of the flights that people need to get on to go any place leave very early in the morning, actually before we start service sometimes. And so it's difficult to get service out there. The other thing is, when you think about the logistics of where people that are flying out are coming from, we don't have a system that brings people, say, into the Eugene station in one place. So it's really complex. And so when we've tried to run that, like I said, I want to say there's three or four times that we've done this in various ways. you don't get a lot of people that are actually using, going to the airport to fly out. Sometimes you'll get workers, but not very many. And so we've really, it's not really on the way to anything, unless you're going to Junction City, of course. And that's where the last time we tried this, we basically had our Junction City service meet a contractor to provide service into the airport. And so we had, as many trips out to the airport as we make out to Junction City. And again, the ridership was just really bad. But let me talk about the service we're talking about for the games. At this point, we're looking at providing direct service between the airport and the downtown Eugene station. And at this point, we're proposing to run half-hour service for a good part of the day. And with the idea, though, that we'll see how it's being used and whether we need to run that frequently. So that's our plan, and we're working with our partners to finalize that. And but that'll be the way we provide that service to the airport.
Well, it just occurs to me that if we proceed with the MX on River Road, then we would have regular, frequent service constantly from Santa Clara Station. That, I don't know, that just seems like a possible connection off of Irvington to get out there and back. But, I know before we tried working with LCC and with the various things, and there just wasn't enough development out there at the time. But maybe by the time MX is actually produced, and we'll plan for that when it happens, but it still seemed like a possibility at some point.
Yeah, we continue to look at it. You're right. Development continues to happen, and our service extends. So it's not out of the question in the future.
Each of these changes is significant, but in the scale of when we're doing these kind of big changes, these are relatively minor. For this time period. I just wanted to also note there are no proposed and there's no triggered paratransit changes. And for folks who have an interest in how that works, we're planning on doing a more full presentation to the board in May about the interrelation between paratransit and fixed route service and how service changes impact that for anyone here who might want to join in that public meeting and conversation. Any other questions, comments about the upcoming service plan for fall? All right, then many thanks both to Brett and Tom. I know a lot of work goes into making these types of changes and recommendations. just to make sure that they're done in a very thoughtful and mindful way for this upcoming fall. So thanks for the presentation and going over each of those changes. All right, next on our agenda, if we can have Jeremy join us for the LTD fixed route service policy.
Hello, everybody. Assume everybody can hear me. See if I can get my presentation up and running. Does everybody see the opening slide?
Looks great.
Fantastic. So today I'm going to be talking about our LTD fixed route service policy that was adopted in February by the board. There's no huge changes to the policy as it was before. There's no major material changes. A lot of clarification, changing it so that it is a lot more understandable and readable by folks, staff, and public. So today I'm going to be going over what or why we have a service policy, what a service policy is and what it contains. And we'll also have some time for discussion and questions. Feel free to ask any questions that you have as I move through this. There tends to be a lot of jargon and we want to make sure that people are understanding what we're trying to say. So the creation of a service policy is a federal requirement dating back to the 70s when transit agencies began to receive federal funds. It's guided by FTA Title 6 Circular 4702.1b. This ensures there's no discrimination in service, which is also our Title 6 policy, which I'll cover in later slides. At a minimum, transit agencies must include things like service frequency, service availability, on-time performance for each mode of service, be that BRT, rail, or bus, and vehicle load standards for each mode as well. It's a way to help us measure service performance and allows transit agencies to compare themselves to other agencies as well. LTD adopted its first policy in 1999. The last update was in 2014, and again, the board adopted this update in February of this year. So the service policy provides a framework for the organization in policymaking, decision-making, planning processes, service planning, making changes to our service, and operational analyses for things like the comprehensive operation analysis. It also defines service expectations by route and by route category, identifies evaluation standards, and gives us ways that we would address those evaluations, and defines processes for partners and the public. Again, a lot of these changes were made to make this more readable and more well understood.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does it involve ADA policy and considering that?
So no, this policy does not concern ADA or doesn't deal with ADA policy, since ADA is a standalone policy. It's a federal guideline. This talks about our service as far as things like productivity, stop spacing, things like that, but it doesn't deal specifically with ADA service.
Thank you.
So the fixed route system is guided by network design principles. In terms of a transit network, this becomes a question of balancing transit productivity or ridership and coverage. Productivity's main goal is to get as many riders as possible. And this is usually done by making buses run frequently on continuous linear major corridors, going through the densest parts of the urban core where riders can easily walk to and from bus stops. Coverage service is usually characterized by routes that try to serve as many neighborhoods as possible with much less frequency. Productivity and coverage are usually expressed as a ratio. such as 80% of service allocated to productive routes and 20% of service allocated to coverage routes. There's no single right answer for this, that the service allocation, because it all depends on agency goals. Currently, LTD's productivity coverage balance is 75% productivity and 25% coverage. The service policy identifies the types of routes that are in LTD's network. Each route type has a different expectation of service. For example, in LTD's network, MX is aimed at productivity, focusing on high ridership corridors featuring frequent service. Express routes like the 79X feature limited stops aimed at high commute ridership. Core routes operate frequent service on frequent transit network, on the frequent transit network on major streets. And community and limited and rural routes run much less frequently in less dense neighborhoods or communities and provide an insurance against isolation. Service standards include a variety of measures, which we will cover in the next few slides. Routes are usually measured in terms of productivity or ridership, which is the number of boardings per revenue hour. This measure is also used as an evaluation measure. In LTD's case, a route would be considered substandard if it falls below 67% of the average productivity of all routes of a certain category. So for example, if a core route falls below 67% productivity of all the other core routes, then it would be considered substandard. This measure is measured separately by day type. So weekends are measured differently than weekdays, or weekends and weekdays. Span of service is the hours of operation that buses run for each day type. This chart shows the current span of service for, or by route for our current network. Service standards also include route frequency by route type and basic guidelines for route scheduling. In terms of frequency, this chart shows the desired range of frequency by route type and peak period of service that LTD would like to achieve. For example, on LTD's network, MX operates 10 to 15 minute service during peak service periods on the weekdays and 30 minutes in the evening. Core routes operate 15 to 30 minute peak service on the weekdays, and community routes at 30 to 60 minutes, and so on. Route scheduling guidelines include things like striving to meet span and frequency goals, maintaining clock face headways so it's easy for customers to remember that a bus comes every 10, 15, or 30 minutes, and providing for adequate recovery time to give bus operators necessary breaks and to ensure adequate transfer time for customers. Route design standards provide clarity for staff and the public in understanding how service planners design our service. These include standards such as designing linear routes on the most direct path between station terminals, ensuring route terminals are located at or near major activity centers, limiting loops at the end of routes unless it's the most practical option, and ensuring route deviations are avoided as much as possible. Stop design, classification, and spacing were expanded in the current policy. Route spacing is determined by route type and classification. Amenities are described by route classification. For example, a BRT stop is much different than a standard stop in the system. And stop locations are determined based on a variety of factors, such as safety considerations, ridership, and the jurisdiction of the stop. Vehicle assignments is related to service capacity and is determined by how full a bus is allowed to get before staff considers a larger vehicle or additional trips on the route to accommodate heavy loads. Service reliability standards also include on-time performance standards, which is LTD's current on-time performance metric, is that 90% of buses will leave their scheduled time points no more than 4 minutes behind schedule. Missed trips should be no more than 0.5% of total trips operated. Road calls, or when a vehicle is replaced while en route, should not occur more frequently than every 10,000 miles. Vehicle age is determined by Oregon Department of Transportation Transit Asset Management Standards. And I believe that right now that's no more than 20% of vehicles will be run past their useful life. Service change and evaluation standards are covered in detail in the service policy and describe how staff makes determinations about changes in the system, changes in service at the system, route, and individual trip level. These changes generally occur 3 times a year, and significant changes are reserved for the fall bid, as Brett and Tom alluded to earlier. Performance is evaluated at the route and trip level to ensure adherence to service policy guidelines and may include routing changes for operational need or segment productivity, span and frequency adjustments, trip addition or removal, or reductions in service. Guidelines for implementing additional service have been established and are based on financial resource and funding sustainability, expected ridership and productivity, available staff and resources, or service that helps improve the district's overall network. The process for making service reductions, if required, are also described along with the order in which reductions would be made. Staff makes evaluations based on route performance, which include productivity, ridership patterns, or duplicated service by nearby routes. This analysis could result in reduction in the number of trips, changes in span and frequency, or days of service. The disparate impact policy, Title VI, prohibits trans agencies to discriminate on the basis of race, color, or national origin. The disparate impact policy establishes the threshold for determining whether a major service change or a fare change has a potential disparate impact on minority populations. A major service change would include things like the addition or deletion of a route or the reduction of 25% of a system's overall route miles. One of LTD's core values, as defined in our strategic business plan, is equity, which we have defined as a commitment to listening, and including voices from diverse identities and abilities of our employees and community. And we take care to consider how our decision-making processes address historic inequities in transportation. As we move forward with the strategic business plan and initiatives like the Diversity Council or future comprehensive operational analyses, additional information could be added to the service policy to address other service equity issues that go above and beyond the minimum standards set by FTA. Do we have any questions? Yes, sir. Go ahead, Don.
Muted, Don.
All right, going into things you don't do anyhow. We have designated the 90 routes as rural infrequent travel, but it somehow defines how the exurb communities can use public transportation because of that definition. And I feel like if we develop these mobility hubs, which have been talked about, but nothing done, that we could actually service the 60,000 people who live outside the metro area better with a different designation of, or a different expectation of the productivity on these routes. But of course, that's beyond the purview of this discussion.
Yeah, you know, Donna, and we think about this a lot in terms of ways in which we might be able to better serve those exurbs, as you characterize them, the outlying cities. One of the things that I think we wrestle with is right now that service is characterized in a federal sense as commuter service, and increasing the frequency of that service changes it from commuter service and then starts to require that we provide the ADA paratransit service as well. We've you know, in some cases. So we're at a place now where we're starting to look at that that kind of additional service, particularly in the context of say the STIF funding, being able to provide some of that. I think what we want to do is kind of carefully consider how that might be best be used, how to grow that service in the future. But I mean, that's certainly on the docket. And in that context, we would obviously update the service policy to reflect that.
I wanted to make sure to formally hand off facilitation of the meeting to our chair, Lisa Shulman, who joined us during this presentation, and note we've also achieved a quorum.
Hi there. Sorry, my other job got in the way, so I apologize. And I will unraise my hand since I am now the person who will be calling on the hands. I was interested, Don, since you brought it up, in what is a mobility hub?
Well, as I see it, it's a place where various kinds of active transportation and mobility on demand and mobility as a service kind of congregate at a particular spot, where then the trunk service could just run more frequently. And so that you would actually aggregate the population. Well, and I see in our small communities, Crestwell and Cottage Grove, Junction City, Bonita, that the bus could just go in and out real quickly with the trunk service, and then the various collections would go into a mobility hub.
Okay.
But that's the way I envision it, and I think some discussion has gone, but.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And then it sounds like what Tom was saying was that with the funding situation that we have right now, that isn't something that we can look at, although there might be some changes that are moving in that direction. Did I get that right, Tom?
Yes, that's how we're looking at that.
All right.
Well, when we look at especially Crestwell and Cottage Grove, they're defined simply by the city limits, and we're all covered by ADA standards anyhow. So it serves, you know, I don't know. It seems like it would work without changing the FDA rules on those routes, just because of the way the district defines the service areas. But enough of that.
Thanks. Did anybody have more questions for Jeremy? Thank you, Jeremy. I found that very interesting. I certainly learned a lot about the way you collect and look at data around service. So that was very helpful.
Really happy to be here.
Are we just going in order right now? Since I missed the beginning, I want to make sure that.
Yes, next on the agenda would be the moving ahead update.
Okay, so it sounds like Andrew.
Bear with Zoom here as it processes moving him over.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
So, Andrew, would you mind introducing yourself? Thanks.
Absolutely. Give me just one second.
Sure.
Trying to get my Zoom working. Here we go. Okay. Hello. My name is Andrew Martin. I'm a development planner with Lane Transit District. And I have two agenda items today. My first one is about moving ahead, which is a project some of you may be familiar with. So I just wanted to give you all a quick update and kind of, for those who haven't been engaged in the project, give you a really quick introduction to it and talk about kind of how this will be going in the future, because we will be talking about this again later. So, some of you may be familiar, but for those who aren't, Moving Ahead, it's our partnership with the City of Eugene. And since 2015, we have been studying five major corridors, looking at redesigning them to make them safer and more accessible, primarily for people walking, biking, riding the bus, and using mobility devices along those corridors. And we have done a lot of work. So just to summarize it, since 2015, we basically started out and we went and we talked with community members and we said, if we're successful at redesigning these corridors, what does it look like? In 20 years, what does this corridor look like? And we took those designs that we really got from the community and did a lot of analysis on them. And in 2018, we published thousands and thousands of pages of reports, basically taking a look at a couple of different alternatives on each of those corridors. So for all of them, sorry, I didn't mention the corridors. They are Highway 99, River Road, 30th Avenue to LCC coming out of downtown, Coburg Road, and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And on all of those corridors, we looked at what we call an enhanced corridor alternative, which is kind of a moderate level of investment. And on Highway 99, River Road, Coburg Road, and 30th Avenue down to LCC, we also looked at an MX alternative. And that's our highest level of investment. All of those projects kind of work from the same toolbox and really just trying to find what things we need to do on those corridors and those streets to really make them work better for people. So that includes things like transit priority, you know, better bus stops, but also things for people walking, biking, and using mobility devices. So protected bike lanes, enhanced crossings, like rapid flashing beacons that make it possible to cross kind of mid-block and alert drivers that you're crossing, as well as some other things. So there's been a ton of work put into it. And we're kind of wrapping up this really big phase of the project with the goal of selecting what's called a locally preferred alternative. And the easiest way to explain that, it's kind of a key milestone in the environmental review process. But really, the best way to think about it is we're narrowing our options. So in March, staff, after lots of public outreach in 2018 and 2019, a public hearing in 2019, we worked with our projects committees, which are the Strategic Planning Committee and the Moving Ahead Oversight Committee, which is composed of some elected officials. We asked them to make recommendations to City Council and to LTD's board to select that locally preferred alternative, which really sets us up to do detailed designs and really figure out how to make those corridors work. So we did conceptual designs. The locally preferred alternative sets us up to do the detailed designs and the environmental review process, and go out and try to fund them. So it's kind of technical, but we've narrowed our options. And so I wanted to report back with you all kind of what we're going to be working on in the next few years. This is designed to be kind of a 10-year list of projects that we're working on. So our goal is to either build or substantially advance the work on all of these corridors within the next 10 years. So on Highway 99, both the board and City Council selected enhanced corridor. On River Road, they selected MX. 30th Avenue to Lane Community College, they selected no build with kind of the idea that there are a lot of other projects that the county and the city are working on, as well as some things LTD learned from our transit studies that we should really reconsider that corridor and what kind of investments that we need to make going to LCC after we work on these other projects. On Coburg Road, they selected enhanced corridor, noting that it requires a little bit more study and community engagement than the other corridors, but the process is still basically the same. We need to create detailed designs before we can really move that forward. And on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, they selected enhanced corridor. So kind of at a high level, what does that really mean? Well, it means the planning team has a ton of work to do in the next few years to figure out those detailed designs, which when I say detailed designs, I mean, where exactly does the stop go? And for enhanced corridor, we don't have that yet. That's a new concept for us. So what do those bus stops exactly look like? Things like that. So we're gonna be working with property owners, the broader community to really figure out what these designs look like in a specific way. After we do that, we can start to seek funding do the environmental review process with our partners at the federal level, and then go into permitting and construction. I'll note that City Council has directed staff that they view Highway 99 and River Road as our kind of highest priorities. So we will be working to move all these projects forward kind of on different timelines. But our attention right now is probably we're going to be more focused, at least publicly, on River Road and on Highway 99. Once the city does some more work on Lower Coburg Road, kind of from the Ferry Street Bridge up to Oakway, we're going to get started on Coburg Road. And the really good news is that Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard is partially funded already. The city got a safety grant from the state to implement part of the enhanced corridor vision. So you'll see on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, I'm not sure if it's 2023 or 2024, but the city has funding to install bus and turn lanes to narrow the roadway and stop some of the unsafe driving behavior. We find that taking it down to one lane in each direction with a center turn lane, it helps to prevent some of the speeding and swerving and other unsafe driving behaviors. And they also will be installing additional crossings for people who are kind of outside the cars and need to get across the road. So that's moving forward, at least partially. I guess my goal today was just to be available to answer questions, make sure you all were aware of this, because we'll be coming back to this group over the next few years, several times, I'm sure, to really talk about how building this kind of infrastructure impacts, our riders and particularly people who are experiencing disabilities. We want to make sure we get it right for those groups. So we'll be engaging with you all. River Road, we're kind of scoping out what a process looks like and figuring out how we can fund that. And we'll be back out in public probably sometime late 2022, early 2023 to really start getting those detailed designs created. And you'll definitely be seeing us as part of that process. So with that, any questions? There's a ton of information. As I mentioned, we have thousands of pages of reports, everything from endangered species to traffic impacts to bus ridership costs. If you can think of it, we've probably studied it. But rather than go through the details, I figured I'd focus on whatever questions you all have.
So I rode on River Road for a while, and I'm a power wheelchair user, and in my neighborhood, there weren't any sidewalks, which made it very difficult to get off the bus with my power wheelchair. Is building sidewalks around stops part of your ability?
So that one is pretty hard, I'll say. The county actually owns a lot of the roads off of River Road. Our MX project focuses most specifically on River Road itself. So basically, there would be an MX line running up and down River Road. And then we don't have it specifically planned out, but we would still continue to provide the neighborhood service that's still there. We've costed that out in our kind of estimates for how much this costs to run. We aren't planning at this time to build any new sidewalks as part of this project, but I will say that the city knows that that's an issue, and connectivity to River Road will be really key to making MX work on River Road. And so it's something we're aware of, but this project focuses specifically on River Road itself. But if you have specific places where that's needed, I think the city is interested in figuring out, you know, how to make that work, because it is really key to getting people to the bus.
Thank you.
I don't see any other hands. Does anybody have a question for Andrew about what he just talked about? Should we move to Cosette or have Andrew continue?
I defer to the chair.
All righty then. It seems to me that perhaps having you just stay on instead of popping off and on might make some sense. Is that all right with you, Cosette? Okay. So, Andrew, you are up for presentation number two.
Great. I have another project that we're working on in the planning department I'd like to share with you all. And so in addition to kind of our big transit infrastructure that really helps make the bus a better experience for our customers, we're also thinking about maybe things that aren't necessarily the bus. So I'd like to talk to you today about our mobility management strategy. And so basically, I'll start out by talking about what mobility management is. It's, I don't want to call it a new concept, but a lot of transit agencies are really thinking about the way that they engage with their community. And so mobility management, I like this definition. It's an approach to designing and delivering transportation services that starts and ends with the customer. It begins with a community vision in which the entire transportation network works together with customers, planners, and stakeholders to deliver the transportation options that best meet the community's needs. So it's a really customer-centric approach. And it basically says that, you know, from the customer side, you should be able to get where you need to go. And it's kind of on not just LTD, but it's on LTD and everyone else who's providing transportation to make that an easy, seamless trip. And I think LTD's role in mobility management falls somewhere on a spectrum. And I'm sorry that there's some kind of jargon on here. When you get engaged in this work, people talk, there are a lot of terms that people use, but I think about it as, you know, on one side, LTD can play the role where, you know, you don't feel the need to own a car because we do everything. You just call us up and we'll give you a ride anywhere you want to go. And we'll figure out the best way to do that, whether that's a taxi, a bus, maybe we provide bikes. On the other side of that, maybe LTD doing a lot less, maybe we just drive buses around. And I think there are transportation providers in our region who do that. We contract with some of them. And you might think that you are on an LTD service, but it's actually being driven by someone who LTD doesn't employ. We contract that service to another company. And so they don't really have a lot of responsibility for moving people around the region. And I don't think it makes sense, or this is my opinion. It doesn't make sense for us to be either one of those things. It makes sense for us to be somewhere in the middle. We have, we do a lot of things to move people in the region, but we're not, providing taxi service for everyone who wants it all the time, right? So we make choices about that. And our goal with this project is to really figure out what is the best role for LTD to play and how do we do that? How do we make that successful? And I'll note that LTD, if my slide will change, too far. So LTD is already a mobility manager. And I think a lot of you are probably familiar with some of our efforts in this. And so I like to highlight some of the things we're already doing and things we've been doing for a long time. RideSource is a really great example of that. And I think we've been a leader for a long time, right? The RideSource call center is an opportunity for our customers to place one call. We actually manage, I'm going to get the number wrong, but I know it's more than 15. John knows how many programs. I just know it's a lot. We manage a lot of programs through there. And some people are eligible for two or three. Some people are eligible for just one. It doesn't matter. You call RideSource and we figure out, you know, what is the best program to pay for the ride that you need. And in some cases, that's just LTD paying for it. Sometimes we can get paid back a little bit, but we really take that burden on of figuring out how are you going to get there. And we send a vehicle out or give you a bus pass or whatever we do to get you where you need to go. We've also done a lot of other things. So we've been a partner in the Peace Health Rides bike share system in Eugene from the beginning. We actually did the initial study that said this can work here. And since then, the city, you know, funded it and they found a nonprofit that operates it today. But we've been working closely with them to make sure that you can take a bike share and get on the bus. We work on station placement with them. And we work with them to make sure that it's convenient for our riders and for their riders to make those connections. Another example is our MGO service, which we operated starting in 2019. And we did that in partnership with Lane County, the City of Eugene, Lane Council of Governments, and a private operator who drove it around, potentially with others. I'm still not sure, but we had a lot of partners on that project because we needed them to make it work. And so we have that one, and then we have our LTE connector in Cottage Grove. Both of those were kind of door-to-door on-demand services. In the case of MGO, it was only an application on your phone. In Cottage Grove, we have a service you can call, and we do that with partners. So these are ways that we're really trying to be innovative and find new ways to connect our community, which is our mission. But we also understand we're really good at some things, and some things we need partners to help us deliver. So our question really is, how do we do those partnerships effectively? How do we continue to provide new options to move our community around? And the mobility management strategy is about finding out kind of how we're going to do that most effectively. What we're actually developing to help us do that are a couple of key deliverables. So we're taking a look at all the different ways that LTD can be involved in these types of projects. We are designing a guide that helps us run pilots, because we found that that's a really effective way for us to try things out and see if they work. Sometimes that's the best way to see if it really has value and it works. And our key deliverable is really going to be a framework that helps us make decisions. So when we are seeing an opportunity in the community, maybe a place where people don't have a lot of great mobility options, and we have partners out there, we can really be confident in saying, this works well with our service, this works well for LTD, and it works well for our partners. So this is something we can do and keep, yeah, we want to put sustainable projects out. We want to put things out that work. So this will help us to make those decisions. And lastly, we did a bunch of public outreach and kind of asked people, where they're having challenges today. And our goal with that was to kind of get, I'll say, a list of potential projects. It's not meant to be exhaustive, but we wanted to try this framework out and say, you know, what opportunities are out there today that we could take a look at if we had funding, if there was a grant opportunity or something like that. So just quickly on our schedule, we're kind of a little bit more than halfway through the project. We started last fall and kind of really been doing a lot of our background research, case studies, talking with other agencies, talking with our partners. And then we started doing kind of some stakeholder and public outreach over the winter. Some people on this group were able to join a focus group we did, specifically focused on older adults, people with disabilities, people who have specific mobility challenges. We had a specific focus group on that. We also talked to a lot of other folks to see kind of how our mobility system was working for them. Right now, we are in the kind of middle of putting together that framework for decision-making and really thinking about how we can make this work for the agency. It has to be something that we can implement. So we're working on those implementation tools. And this summer, we'll come out with our kind of final report saying, you know, this is how LTD can move forward. This is our strategy for helping to connect our community. Just a couple of quick things we've learned and we're thinking about, because I wanted to engage with you and allow you to kind of give us any more feedback you have. So when we've been looking at how everybody's looking at kind of doing this work, we found that there are two ways that they're approaching. They're filling in service gaps in areas that don't have service. So we know that there are neighborhoods in town that don't have service today. And some of these tools our agencies are using to fill in those areas where they don't have service. In other ways, they're looking at filling in specialized services gaps. And by that, I mean things like our RideSource call center. Are there people today who need rides who aren't qualified for any of our programs? Some agencies are looking at these types of partnerships to fill in those gaps for people who don't qualify for programs that exist.
So I want to clarify. So
yes,
one has to do with geography and the other one has to do with the types of services available. Is that
exactly?
Okay.
Yes. Another way, These are kind of dimensions that we're thinking about. So another kind of way the agencies are making decisions about these are kind of how the projects get started. And in some agencies, they're really top down. Some agencies have boards of directors that are saying, we want you to implement this type of on-demand service. In other agencies, staff are really pushing the needle. So in Portland, they have a bundled transportation wallet for low-income folks, and they get so much money towards TriMet, so much money towards bike share and scooters and some other services. And that was an idea that came from staff. They really identified a need and brought that to their board. So there are different ways we can go about getting projects started. And finally, we're thinking about how they get managed in the long term, because we want these, if we're going to start something for the community, we want to keep it going for the community. Some agencies are thinking about how they can streamline operations. And I would say that our RideSource call center is a great example of that, in that we can manage a lot of programs in one group. And I think we do a really fantastic job. The other way to think about it is creating kind of a new department. So some agencies have created what they call a Department of Mobility Management or some other terminology like that, where you have three or four people at an agency who are constantly looking for new opportunities. And so we want to, as part of our strategy, we will be taking a look at kind of how does LTD fit with those different models of starting and managing services in the long run. And finally, just to give you an idea of kind of how we're thinking about this in terms of what should LTD be doing? What are we good at? And how are we going to engage with this in the future? We've identified 10 different roles that LTD could be playing. And I will just say that when I said we're already a mobility manager, when we went through all of these different roles and then said, well, what is LTD doing today? We're doing all of them. We're already doing all of these things. And if you're interested, we can go into kind of the details of what these mean. But really, I think the point of this was to give you a little information and let you know this is what we're working on. We're not proposing to change any services. So that's not what we're doing here. All we're doing is saying, if LTD is going to continue to be innovative, we want to make sure that we're doing a really good job at kind of setting these programs up and continuing to, I think, be a leader in transportation. So with that, I would entertain any questions and kind of talk about the project more if you want.
I feel like today we have heard from some data analysts and planners. So we've heard from folks from the bottom of that screen today. Does that make sense to everyone else? I'm a big data geek. So of course I would love to talk about your little pods, your 10 pods, but I'm not sure that we have time for that. Does anybody have questions? Don? Sound?
Well, Andrew, you said before that, you know, LTD does 40-foot buses, and we know how to do that. And I was just looking at that schematic you put on there for mobility management, and Lisa brought up the question before, well, what is a mobility hub? And it seems like, well, we could put mobility hubs in all of these neighborhoods and service the MX. And I wonder if that's part of your planning or thinking or what might come from that schematic of mobility management.
Yeah. I think the way to think about it, right, is I think we all want mobility hubs. I think that's a great idea. The question though is, what's LTD's role in that? And that's what we're trying to answer here is, does LTD build mobility hubs? Do we connect to them? Do we fund them? You know, we already play a lot of different roles. And I, just by way of example, right, like with the Diamond Express, that's not really funded by LTD, but LTD manages the contracting. We do a lot of work to make the Diamond Express happen, right? So we do, to talk about some of the roles we have, right, like we're not a funder, but we kind of manage the program. We do data analysis and reporting. We do a lot of the planning work. We promote it. Occasionally, we provide a vehicle to them. We have other partnerships, like I think we provide a bus to Willamette Lane. And in that case, you know, our role really is just to help Willamette Lane get people to their activity center. And we just provide a vehicle. So with mobility hubs, when you ask that question, like, I think we're probably not going to do everything, right? We're not good at doing everything, but the mobility management strategy is intended to help us clarify, well, LTD might fund that. I don't know. That's your job as a board member to decide that. We'll offer advice. We definitely want to be a partner in that, an advisor in connecting our services and offering, you know, our perspective on what's going to work. But for things like bike share, you know, we have really good partners, so we're probably not going to be the people that, you know, provide bike share there. So we definitely have a role, Don. I think it's we're trying to figure out exactly what that role is.
Well, and let me add to what Andrew's saying, Don, because in a you know, in the broad sense of a mobility hub, you know, our downtown Eugene and Springfield Station serve as mobility hubs. Mm-hmm. You know, so we understand the principle of that. I think what I take from what, you know, the series of questions that you've asked around this, you know, that strategy is one that we want to look at for, you know, for Cottage Grove and Crestwell, for example. Those are perfect examples. Also, some of our, you know, the outlying areas where maybe we have coverage service today might be a good place for us to look at how can we connect people better to that service so that, you know, it gets used more and you're providing that range of mobility that people can draw on. So I think, you know, that's the certainly where I think we want to head. And it's, you know, how we move forward is embedded in all the things that Andrew went through today in terms of all the roles that are there to play.
And I'll say, you know, we're working with our directors right now to try and talk with them through, you know, what does playing all these roles mean? And so I bring that up because there is a world in which LTD could do everything, but we don't live there today, right? Like our funding is limited. So we're trying to help set up a way for us to really talk about, you know, what, not what's the best use of funding, but how do we start to get at these, like, well, how much more could we do if we had a partner that helped us with providing technology? How much better can our community be in terms of getting around if LTD is doing one thing, but we can get help from our cities to do another? Because we can't, with our current funding levels, do it all, even though I think we all want to. So how do we find those partners, and what is our best role to really connect our community? That's our mission. We're trying to connect the community and do that in ways that we haven't done before.
Well, I may be a bit parochial here, absolutely parochial, just in terms of Cottage Grove and, you know, our community's application for federal money for a mobility hub. And well, we didn't get that last one, but the city has already kind of designated a location. It owns the land. It has some thought processes. There's people in the community who are investing in mobility, just making bicycles more available. So, you know, our community is moving in that direction. And I just want to be sure that LTD is on board with this. And maybe eventually we could talk about more frequent service up and down the freeway if, you know, we're not running 60-foot buses around the community and the community is doing its mobility locally. Well, through the other grants and operating South Lane Wheels, and you know how it goes, but that's kind of what I'm hoping, that eventually we will have our own mobility hub here and maybe just be a model for the other communities to work off of. But, you know, it just seemed like a place to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's a great example, Don, because there are a lot of resources being put into that, and you know, to the extent that Cottage Grove is making that happen, LTD will be, I mean, we have been a partner in the kind of, I forget what they called it, the transit development plan that they put together. We were a partner on that, and we identified that LTD needs to continue to be a partner. But it's really great from my point of view that Cottage Grove is kind of realizing their community vision, and we're trying to figure out how does LTD, you know, interface with that, because you all are doing great things down there.
I feel like your Andrew, your continuum that had to do with where doing everything versus, you know, being very basic in what you offer, there could be a parallel line of that has to do with funding. And, you know, if we had all the funding in the world, it would be great to be able to provide so much. So just recognizing that we are, you know, funding is the thing that keeps, well, pretty much anything from moving forward, but it sounds like you've got some great plans and great ideas. Does anybody else have any other thoughts or questions for Andrew?
I had a question. I am a power wheelchair user, and sometimes I get on the bus and there's already one or two people with mobility devices on the bus and I can't get on. So is the committee looking at routes where people with mobility devices are mostly using and how to increase those routes?
I would say that that issue, I think, is more addressed in what we're doing with moving ahead and also our comprehensive operations analysis, in that that's really about fixed route buses. And with this mobility management strategy, we're taking a look at maybe everything else we offer, if that makes sense. So we're not looking at the frequency of buses as part of this project, but our other projects like moving ahead and like our comprehensive operations analysis are taking a look at, you know, where are we running into issues with not having enough capacity for people who use mobility devices? And in some way, increasing the frequency of the bus is one of our best tools to address that problem, because we just put more wheelchair capacity out on those bus routes. But that's more about the project I talked about before with MX on River Road, but also our comprehensive operations analysis, which is going to take a look at kind of the frequency of all of our buses in town.
Okay, thank you.
But we do look at that, and we certainly know that that's an issue.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. And now, Cosette, you are up with statewide transportation improvement fund consolidation.
Thanks so much. So first of all, great conversation so far. Much appreciate the focus and participation of this group. Good afternoon. I'm here today to provide information about the consolidation of two of the many funding programs LTD depends on to do much of the good work of the district. I'm just going to warn you, it's a little bit techy, but I'm going to do my best to simplify and make it digestible and easy. Before we dive into the details, it's important to circle back to our mission, vision, values developed to guide our strategic business plan. There's many choices that we have, as we just talked about, and there's competing priorities. And while, as we just discussed, we'd like to do them all, we know that we have limited resources. Funding, such as we're going to be discussing today, provided through the state, contribute to our ability to live out these tenets and are reflected in the programs and services they support. Today, I'll be introducing the two funding programs that will be moving forward as one. This will include providing a high-level summary of the funding sources and a sample of the programs and services they've historically been allocated to support. Second, I'll provide a summary of the changes in the rules developed to continue to meet the spirit and intent of both programs, but consolidated into a single process to allocate and manage the funding. And third, I'll provide some next steps as we approach the development of our 2024-2025 Lane County STIF formula plan, including the STF programs, which that can be confusing, but I'll try to break that down here in just a few minutes, and help us be ready to submit our funding plan by January 2023. I also want to let you know that today we're going to be discussing only the formula funds received under these two programs. These funds are designated to our region based on population or employee payroll taxes generated in our area. Our job is to create a process to identify how best to use these funds in our area. These are the funds we will be discussing today. There are also other opportunities for funding that is competitive in nature from a statewide perspective, and those are called discretionary funds. However, the bulk of the rule changes and the work coming in the immediate future are in the formula funds. So first, let's start with our Special Transportation Fund, or STF for short. And STF and STIF sound a lot alike, but they are two different programs. And again, right now we're just going to be talking about the STF, which is the Special Transportation Fund. This is state funding managed by the Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT. It was created way back in 1985 by the Oregon Legislature, funded primarily through a cigarette tax, state photo IDs, what's called a lawnmower tax, and other funds identified through ODOT. Funding is allocated on a biennial basis, meaning that we receive 2 years at a time. The amount we receive is based on the population of our region. This funding is intended to increase the resources available to provide public transportation for older adults and people with disabilities. The programs are guided to a large degree by our Lane County Human Service Coordination Plan, outlining priorities for use of this funding. This is one of the most flexible funding programs. It can be used to fund transportation services, including operations, capital equipment, planning, travel training, and other transit-related purposes. Unlike many of our funding programs, this funding does not require a local match. It is allocated in our metro area as well as in our rural areas. It funds community programs and can be used as match dollars to leverage other funding. LTD is the designated STF agency responsible for the coordinated plan, for developing the bylaws and oversight of the Special Transportation Fund process to identify programs and make application to ODOT. And we're also responsible for general oversight, including contracts with providers and partners and reporting back to ODOT on the use of the funding. This is a list of some of the programs and services funded using the STF funding. Some of these services are inside the metro area only, while others extend regionally, including service to some of our rural areas. Some programs are primarily funded using these STF funds, while others, such as the Florence Rhodey Express and Oak Ridge Diamond Express, are more likely funded using federal dollars, but we use the STF dollars as the required match to access these other funds. So we're only providing a small amount of their total funding need. Other examples of critical programs and services provided include transportation for children attending Pearl Buck Preschool, mobility management activities to perform eligibility assessments for individuals accessing services through our RideSource call center. We have our Crucial Connections program. It provides a small number of trips for immediate medical transportation not currently covered by other programs. We have our veterans funding to help veterans access their benefits. And our origin to destination complementary ADA paratransit services in the metro area and in Florence. In summary, this is a relatively small amount of old funding that has remained relatively flat over the years, while the cost to provide the services and programs have naturally increased. This has required some tough choices when we're allocating funds. Again, these funds are distributed in increments of two-year funding, and we're typically receiving about $900,000 a year. So in contrast, we'll take a look at the newer and much larger funding program, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund, or STIF. Where the STF funds are distributed based on population, the STIF funds are collected through an employee payroll tax and distributed back to the area it was generated. The STIF program is intended to expand public transportation to access jobs, improve mobility, relieve congestion, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This funding comes with some minimum requirements to serve low-income individuals and students in grades 9 through 12. The formula STIF plans are also very flexible with no match required. In the same way we are for the STF funding, LTD is the qualified entity or QE for STIF formula funds distributed to Lane County. And we're responsible for the adherence of the requirements, the development of the formula plan, and the process to allocate the funds, also contract oversight and reporting of the funding. We're currently almost midway through our second biennium of STIF-funded programs. Some have been paused due to COVID. We are in the process now of beginning or restoring these paused programs in the near future. Like the STF funding, STIF funding is distributed on a biennial cycle. STIF funding has supported transformational new service such as the Link Lane service that operates between Eugene and Florence onto Yahats. These are some of the programs and services funded through the STIF funds. These include programs and services operating within the LTD service area, rural Lane County, and also have opportunities to connect to services and create more seamless transportation services outside of Lane County. Funds allocated to Lane County in our current biennium is around $9.5 million a year, so quite a bit larger than the STF funds. So both funds are funded by ODOT on a biennium basis. Both are distributed based on a formula. Both employ advisory committees to ensure an inclusive process. And just incidentally, in Lane County, Lane Transit District is the agency responsible for both funds. So as you can see, there are many similarities between these two funding programs. So it makes sense to look at consolidating the processes to improve efficiency in the administration and have an opportunity to also improve funding reliability. Lane Transit District staff have participated at a statewide level on committees to plan for and develop the rules for this consolidation. These rules were recently approved by the Oregon Transportation Commission, and ODOT is putting together their solicitation for the funding right now, due out in the next 1 to 2 months. The STIF consolidation means that beginning with the 2024-2025 biennium, there will be one STIF program that will encompass both the payroll tax-based program and the population-based program serving older adults and people with disabilities. So as we participated in the Rules Advisory Committee merging these two funds, it was clear from both the participants and the public that there was a lot of passion about how the two funding programs were merged, that they would continue to support the spirit and intent of both funding programs and use the funding in the most fair way to do the most good. Recognizing that the needs and priorities of each community is different, many parts of the processes were left intentionally vague to allow local communities to determine the best fit for our locale within certain parameters. The biggest and most notable changes are listed here, but there's a lot of changes. Of note, advisory committee representation was changed to reflect ODOT's commitment to strengthen practices around diversity, equity, and inclusion, expanding populations for consideration to include veterans and Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So this is the full timeline of the STIF consolidation process. We're currently in spring 2022. ODOT recently held a session at their Oregon Public Transportation Conference to provide a summary and an overview of the rules and a planned timeline. So we're expecting, as I mentioned, for them to post the full solicitation and application soon. As the qualified entity, Lane Transit District must be complete our process and have our plan approved by our LTD board to be submitted by January 2023. And the funds would become available in July of 2023. So we'll be coming back to you at your next meeting with an update on the process and our plan to enlist and engage this committee as we move forward in the development of the Lane County STIF plan. Specifically, this committee will be important to engage in the allocation of the program serving older adults and people with disabilities. In the meantime, as a qualified entity, LTD staff are creating a process and timeline to bring to the board at their May meeting. As we talk with other qualified entities and with ODOT, the recommendations for this coming biennium are basically to keep it simple, to navigate the new requirements. Also give us an opportunity to ensure we continue the spirit and integrity of both historical programs and meet the relatively short timeline to create our plan. We're reviewing our advisory committee membership now, and we'll work with our board to ensure we have representation and a process that meets the new requirements. One likely scenario is to continue with a special work group to make recommendations on funding transportation services, specifically serving older adults and people with disabilities, and then roll those recommendations up into the STIF plan to be approved by our board. Some members of this committee have participated before on our STF advisory committee and are familiar with the process to allocate these funds. So you could be very helpful as we approach this next biennium. So I just want to thank you. This has been a really technical presentation. I appreciate your patience. Might be a little bit confusing, so I'm going to open it up for questions. I've provided just a general understanding and clarification of the funding and the programs they support. I think one thing I want to leave you all with is that LTD has a strong commitment to continue to provide services to older adults and people with disabilities as this plan is being developed. This will be top on our mind as we move forward with future allocations. So I'd like to open it up to questions or clarification, knowing that this presentation has been primarily foundational with more details to come. Any questions?
Well, thank you. That was pretty clear. That was great. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
So it looks like, are we having a strategic business plan update?
I don't. That is actually just a written report for this meeting.
Okay. So we have that in hand. So does anybody have any comments about the business plan, strategic business plan? Well, does anybody have any thoughts about things that they would like to add to the next agenda? And please make sure that if you do have thoughts after the meeting that you reach out to either myself or John or Cosette to make sure that we have your thoughts and ideas. And I believe that unless something has come up that has changed the agenda, that we can adjourn at this point. All right. Thank you all.
Thank you all. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Have a good day.